in Portland. It's 503-733-2970. Rick. My mom got into a huge swarm of wasps 40 years ago. She came home hugely misshapen. And is allergic for the rest of her life. Okay, there you go. Let's see. Well, I should put the rest of these emails on here. Coming up later on, we got Jen Lane will be here. We'll get to these phone calls. We got our good friend Dan DeRose going to be joining us here in a moment. We'll find out how white and nerdy the Rick Emerson show is. And we've got today's top five. It's all coming up. It's 503-733-2970. Let's get one more Killer Bee story here before we do anything else. John, you're on the Rick Emerson show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick. I had the wonderful privilege of working down in Arizona this last winter.
Okay.
And I bury things for a living. I do phone or cable or whatever. And I had to work in this little community called Congress, which is between Prescott and Phoenix.
Right.
Extremely dry, extremely hot, and we have to have utility notifiers come out and mark all the utilities before we do anything. And we used to always get these big and huge blue letters in the street, killer bees. And they would get into the water meters and live in the water meters, especially during the dry months, because that was the only place they could get water.
So, killer bees are one of those things that you always hear, they were always being lectured about, but they never really seem to arrive.
That's the thing that I, and I'm like, I went into the Water Bureau there and said, okay, killer bees. He says, don't mess with them. He says, they won't kill you. He says, but you will never, he says, you'll never be the same. And we would get in, and I had to actually work near a nest. I had to bury the nest in dirt, do my job as quickly as possible, and get out of there. And by the end, we were wrapped up in sweatshirts and baseball caps and leather gloves because they're not normal-looking bees. They're a lot larger.
This is terrifying. When you use phrases like, they're not normal-looking bees, Rick.
No, they're you know, and it's I guess they're extremely aggressive. You know, and we did everything from pouring gasoline on them, which typically will kill pretty much anything.
Well, that's the thing. All of these conversations inevitably lead back to fire ants, because fire ants just they fascinate and terrify me. And you always hear about those people trying to get the fire ant nests out of there, and they do it by just filling the nest full of kerosene and dropping in a match.
Well,
and when really being lit on fire and covered in kerosene doesn't kill you, it's time for us to pack up and go to another planet.
Yeah, it was very disheartening. And then so you got to learn, if it said killer bees, they weren't getting their cables buried or whatever we were doing at their particular address.
And so when you said it was labeled killer bees, was it just like spray painted or something?
Big blue letters in the street. I don't know if you've ever seen, like, you're driving down the road,
yeah,
you see those locate.
Oh, that's creepy. I swear to God, that's so creepy that it would just be spray painted on the street, killer bees. Because you know what? That's like some I Am Legend crap where it's like spread like zombies or, you know, vampires just spray painted on a wall somewhere.
I took a picture of that with a giant tarantula walking through the killer bee sign and sent it to my daughter who loves bugs.
Why would anybody voluntarily live in a place where you could take a picture of a giant tarantula walking across a sign warning you of killer bees?
You cannot imagine. Imagine a hell worse than Congress, Arizona. And I challenge anybody who's ever been there to call up and refute that, because it is the most godforsaken hot. It'd be like living on a Foreman grill.
Covered in bees. All right, there you go. All right, well, God bless you. I'm glad you don't live there anymore, sir.
Me too.
Thank you. You spread the word about this program, please.
Every day.
There you go. Thank you. That's John. Well, that's unnerving. All right, then. Ladies and gentlemen, it's 503-733-2970. Coming up, our very own Aaron Geek in the City weighs in on Tokyo Rose, etc. Before we do that, though, I've probably got some appropriate music here. Let's now welcome the Welcome to the Rick Emerson Show, our good friend Dan DeRose, formerly of Coin Television, now of Embittered Unemployment. How are you, Dan?
How are my favorite people in the coin tower?
Hello, Dan.
Really, though, that's a very relative statement itself, though, really, because we're the only ones left here, right? I mean, that it? So,
I think somebody shut the lights off last week and left.
Everybody else here is just, it runs on diodes. So you are, before we get too ahead of ourselves, now, are you Do you get another gig? Is that what you said in this email? I was very unclear about the email you sent to me.
Oh, it's a couple of times a year I've been traveling to Cleveland, Ohio, and doing the reporting thing in Cleveland for WOIO, 19 Action News.
Now, I thought you were, as they say, out of the game. I thought you were moving on from journalism.
I am moving on from journalism. This is sort of a temporary gig. I have no interest in moving to Cleveland. No offense to anybody that lives there, but wow. What makes it a good news town makes it a bad place to live.
Cleveland, here's the thing is, I don't know anything about Cleveland. For some reason, when I conjure up the image of Cleveland in my head, it's just like endless hundreds of thousands of acres of just like brown fabric. I don't know why.
That Drew Carey's full of crap because Cleveland does not rock.
It comes up in my head just being all beige and nondescript. What would you say the defining characteristic of living in Cleveland is?
Their main thoroughfare, sort of like our Burnside, is a street called East Euclid.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're heading up Euclid, only about one out of every third building is occupied. And we're talking 20, 30-story buildings.
And I mean, is it just like, is it the bad economy? Is the whole, I mean, what is the industry in Cleveland? What runs that town?
It used to be steel.
Uh-huh.
Very much like Pittsburgh has had to reinvent itself.
Yeah.
Cleveland is trying to reinvent itself. It's on, I believe, Lake Erie, and it's just polluted. You would never set foot in the lake.
What do you suppose Cleveland would possibly reinvent itself as?
A shutdown town and everybody left.
You'll love our lack of spark.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. So you're going to go do that? Because when we... let's back up here. So you had come on the show a few weeks ago because Tim Riley had been gone. And so I don't know how we ended up constructing things this way, but we had Scotty J doing the news, and we had you, the actual former anchor. You were the news guy, and you were doing the call screening, and the whole thing is all very strange. But you did such a great job talking about the media that we had asked you. I said, hey, we want to kind of do this recurring feature that's just sort of media news. You sort of gossip about what's going on in the media. And I said,
here's what I want to talk about today, and I would love for your callers to call in about this and weigh in. There is a movement, and it's been going on for about the last 3, 4, 5 years towards internet journalism. KGW in this area has probably taken the reins, well, has taken the reins on this, and has just now started to almost dedicate reporters, photographers, specifically for their internet. Now, those people are still sharing time between, you know, the news at 5 and 6 and the internet. But there is this movement towards people who are more and more just going to click and choose their news on the internet. Now, I'm going to pay COIN a rare compliment here. They finally, in the last couple of weeks, were able to put streaming video on the internet, which makes them and a TV station in Grand Forks, North Dakota, the last two stations in the country to do so.
Always on the cutting edge.
They are, man. Yeah. They're right there. Don't let anybody tell you different. They're right there.
Leading the way.
I would like to hand it to them. It's in just a shade under a decade. They caught up with the rest of the country. But it is not going to be enough. And I'm curious, will people, as we get more computer savvy and as the baby boomers sort of, you know, pass on and we get into that sort of information-hungry age, will people stop watching the evening news and start just getting on local TV websites and just clicking and choosing on stories they want?
Well, we had talked about the launch of Katie Couric, because around here that Katie Couric thing was just so, I mean, we talked about it. We didn't talk about it as much as it was just sort of talked about because there were these commercials that were running for it like every 5 minutes. And I tuned into the first two nights that Katie Couric did the news, and I have not tuned in again since then, but that's just because I don't watch the evening news. It is very telling that repeatedly and constantly throughout that first Katie Couric show, she was just directing people to CBSNews.com where you could watch it anytime you wanted.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really seem like that's a lot of appointment viewing these days.
But so leave us a COIN to just do the bare minimum of getting the stories that are done for the day on online.
You really know how to just hold on to a grudge. That's the thing we admire about you. You know how to just never let something go.
Well, and the next thing I want to talk about, this whole Bill Clinton, Fox, ambush type deal. Let me explain to your listeners how an interview like that gets set up. Now, of course, it's It's Fox's people talking to Clinton's people. And usually in that setting up process, especially if you're going to walk into something like Fox, they're going to say, hey, Clinton will come talk to you guys on the condition that this is what we talk about. We spend all the time on what he raised $7 billion for foreign aid or whatever.
Right.
And so for him to say he was ambushed, there had probably been some sort of agreement that he would come on the show as long as that's all they talked about.
Well, because normally, and I mean, look, and just even with like low-key, low-level celebrities, I've had this in the past, where they will outline very clearly in advance stuff that they will talk about and stuff that they won't talk about. Like, who is that guy? Sarah, what's the is it Vern Troyer? Who's the mini-me guy?
Vern Troyer, yeah.
Was some friends of ours interviewed, I sound like I'm in the mob, some friends of ours interviewed Vern Troyer a while back, and they were told really specifically in advance that you can't ask about anything having to do with mini-me or Austin Powers in any way, or he will actually walk.
Wow.
I mean, which is, as it is, like the time I interviewed J.J. Walker, you know, of Good Times fame, and the guy told me really specifically and really, like, it was like a preemptive anger at the beginning of it. Do not ask him to say dynamite. And as I expected the guy, it sounded like he ought to be chomping on a cigar and balling up a fist to punch me in the nose. Like they were actually preemptively like pissed at me that I might even theoretically ask him to do it. So I can't even imagine the ground rules for Bill Clinton.
But at the same time, let's be real. You are a former president of the United States. This is Fox News Channel. What did you think was going to happen?
Well, that's the thing. It's like if you're going on Fox, you got to know. This is why I suspected. Tell me this. We're talking to Dan DeRosa, who is sort of our media correspondent, our media maven. But my speculation was that because it is sort of a given that Hillary's going to be running in 08, it is a fait accompli. My thing was that Clinton went in there knowing that they were going to look for a fight and knowing that the left is just so hungry for anybody that has a sack and that he would punch back, thus, you know, allowing Hillary to sort of bathe in his reflected glow.
But how interesting was it that we finally saw Bill Clinton fully take off his gloves and become a complete child about the whole interview? Anytime an interview subject sits on the other side of the table and says, oh, look at that smirk on your face, that is a child. You are a former president. Handle it with some dignity. Answer the question and move on.
He did seem like he was, and there was a couple moments there. He was pretty, I thought he was more restrained than the media depicted it as, but there were one or two moments where I thought, it's sort of like when you watch Bill O'Reilly's TV show. Bill O'Reilly's a terrible radio host, but when you watch his TV show, it is a little compelling in the sense that when you watch the O'Reilly Factor on TV, half the time you just expect him to go across the desk at whoever the guest is. You know what I mean? You just expected me, like, that's it, you make me sick, and just to lunge right for the throat. And there were moments when I felt like Clinton was going to do that.
And look at how defensive he got about the whole thing. Why would you have not, you know, put myself in those shoes, why would you have not just sat there and said, I did what I could? I did what I could.
Because the guy just keeps...
And then that's it. Leave it at that.
He can't let it go, man. He's not unlike someone else we know. He just grabs onto it, just holds onto that seething grudge. So,
but that's about all I got.
All right.
You guys are going to be on your own for a few weeks.
Well, that's, so you're going to be in Cleveland now. Just to kind of recap, so we had the last time you were here, I had sort of talked to you, and I was like, hey, well, we're looking for somebody to sort of come on and just recap what's going on in the actual media, to talk about what's going on in, you know, on TV or radio or whatever. And I said, but it's important to us. We want someone who doesn't care if they burn their bridges. And you said, well, that's it. I screw it. I'm done with being a journalist. I'm out of the media.
Well,
see, here's the thing.
I'll put it that way.
You're getting sucked back in.
I'm done doing the news here in Portland.
Yes,
I have no problem. You know, they're flying out to Cleveland. I'll do the news there. I'm just Portland. And see, that's one of the reasons I'm done with news here in Portland, is this is an incredible community to live in. And therefore, it is a very, very slow news town. For somebody who's, you know, like me, hitting the streets every day, I'm out there trying to turn up stories, trying to find the dirt. There is no dirt here. There's just truth.
That should be your tag. There's no dirt here. Just truth.
All right.
Trees.
Nice. Feel free to give me a call if it's a big national story, something going on.
We'll
hear about it over there.
Enjoy Cleveland, my friend.
Sarah Dillon, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
probably beautiful as always. It's good to hear from you guys.
Oh, no, I'm not wearing any makeup.
Dan DeRose, lady. And she hasn't washed her hair recently.
I have washed my hair.
I'm sorry.
Whatever.
She's washed her hair once.
You're just still...
Hey, root for the Hawkeyes this weekend. I'm headed back to my alma mater to watch Iowa put a little wood to that Ohio State team.
I don't know what you're talking about, but thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Dan.
Folks, take care.
Dan DeRose, ladies and gentlemen, there you go. It's 503-733-2970. Very quickly, before we do anything else, let me find the... oh, do I not have this? Oh, I thought I just had this as part of my my regular queued-up bank here. Ba-ba-ba-ba. Let's see, ladies and gentlemen.
One big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals.
George. Hi, George.
Hey, Sarah. Hey.
How are you,
Sarah? Rick, how's it going?
What's up, George?
I've got something that'll turn the bones of yourself and all of your listeners to dust when they view it. And that is,
okay.
I want everybody to Google white shark in pond.
White shark. Oh, a guy just sent this to me.
Yeah, that was me.
Is this real?
This is so real. It was a popular swimming hole in Cape Cod.
Okay, I just describe what I'm seeing right here.
Yes.
This is the story. Great white shark filmed in Cape Cod swimming hole.
Yes, sir.
And I'm looking at it right now. I'm looking at these photographs. And this,
you want to watch.
This is exactly as you're describing it. This is a swimming hole. This is a pond. I mean, this is like straight out of Jaws. This is a pond in Massachusetts in which there's a goddamn great white shark.
Several hundred feet inland, my friend. It swam through a narrow drainage channel about 6 feet wide and several hundred feet long, up the channel into the swimming hole.
Oh, and this is, by the way, very reminiscent of this book called Close to Shore by Michael Caputo. Mm-hmm. Close to Shore is the story of the great white shark attacks of 1906 off the Jersey coast that inspired Jaws, including at one point a great white shark taking sort of the wrong turn and ending up in a pond.
Mm-hmm. And it's a murky pond.
Okay, we're done. We're done.
You can see the tree. Looks like Ross Island in the background.
Go away now.
Have sweet dreams.
Okay, thank you.
Get away from the water.
All right, bye. Okay, and we're done. Jesus God Almighty. All right, there you go.
Oh.
And that's in a pond. It's not in the ocean. And that's a government webpage, by the way. That is the Massachusetts.gov website. That's not some Clyde Lewis cryptozoology crap. Those are real pictures of a great white shark in a pond. That'll keep you from going to the water for the rest of your life. Yeah, you got to read this book Close to Shore, because they talk about all of these shark attacks that happened off the Jersey coast in 1906, it was 1916. And it was like five people killed within a week, and it's very obviously what Peter Benchley based Jaws on. And this guy tells the most terrifying story about a shark I have ever heard. And I, as you know, I'm not crazy about the water. And it's not the water itself, it's that you know there's evil lurking in that water everywhere. But this guy tells the story about being in the middle of town, because in this town there was a pond that is in the middle of the town, sort of in Mayberry. There's the gazebo, and there's the malt shop, and then there's the guy that does the shoe shine, and then there's the pond. And this guy was talking about walking over a wooden bridge to get from one side of the pond, which again is in the middle of the town, walking over the bridge to get from one side of the pond to the other. And as he looked down, he described what he called, quote, the biggest, blackest fish he had ever seen in his life, slowly sliding across the riverbed.
Oh.
And then he saw, like, the dorsal fin, you know, break the water. In a pond! You are all going to die. Everyone panic now. Jesus.
I didn't have a fear of sharks until I saw that picture that I sent you.
They're evil. They're evil.
Rows and rows of razor sharp teeth.
Rows of razor sharp teeth that you could, I mean, and that just replace themselves. I mean, you know how that works, right?
No.
Okay, let me tell you this. Just one fine little fact about sharks, just to make it a little, and they're not evil as such, but the thing with sharks is, I mean, they're like everything else out there. They're just trying to eat their way to the top of the food chain, not unlike a giant squid. I'll just make this final observation about sharks, and then we'll take a break, and we'll come back. We got Tim Riley coming up, Top 5, Jen Lane, Ed McCarthy, and so forth. Here's the thing about great white sharks and their teeth. Sharks, as you noted, have huge razor-sharp teeth, that line both the top and bottom of their mouths. What you don't realize about sharks is that and they actually are photographs where you can see this happening. But sharks have, how do I put this, a sort of dental conveyor belt. And so there's the tooth you see in the front that's standing straight up that'll, like, that'll kill you. As time goes on, as they eat people and chew through their bones, the teeth become sort of blunted and they lose their sharpness. And so as time goes on, the teeth lean forward and fall out, and they're replaced by a new tooth that just pops up right behind it.
Oh.
Not unlike those things at the fair where you throw a ball and knock down the wooden clown and then it pops back up. That's what shark's teeth have. And so there's an endless, like, conveyor belt of new teeth always being produced. So the teeth on the bottom have always just come into being and are always razor sharp because they're always losing them and replacing with brand new ones. They're sort of like fingernails, except they're razor sharp and about 3 inches long and it'll cut you in half. Let's take a break now. We'll come back. It's 503-733-2970. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Coming up, we got Jen Lane. We got Ed McCarthy from CNN. He's going to talk about Terrell Owens. We got Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth, the top five and more from Weird Al Yankovic. You stay right there. It's AM 970 Solid State Radio. Like Yakima.
Yeah, that's how I remember it, exactly like Yakima.
Is she here now?
I think so.
Yeah, doesn't matter. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. We're going to play the word association game. Here's the phone number. It's 503-733-2970. When I say the word Wenatchee, I want you to call and say the first thing that comes to your mind.
I'm not prompting him to do this, Delane.
Who?
I don't know.
I don't know what you're talking about. Take it on post. 503-733-2970. We'll make this a little Rick Emerson Insta poll. I just want you to call and tell me the first thing that comes to mind when I say the word Wenatchee. Wenatchee, Washington. It's 503-733-2970. In the meantime,
we have that 40-second delay now.
Oh, I know. No, it's true. No,
yeah.
It's...
So those phone calls will be popping up for a while.
No, it's true. No, but in the meantime, we'll go to Tim Riley here at the City Desk.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
We're going to go back to, we have some fresh sound bites here. Hot off the press and thank
you. Oh, I'm sorry. Should I reload?
You should, yes.
All right, hold on just one moment here. Let's see. Is this, okay, let me load this. Load rack network. Replace? Yes. Yeah. Tim Riley, one.
Yeah.
All right.
There we go.
Okay.
Dallas Cowboys receiver Terrell Owens denies he tried to commit suicide last night and adds he was not depressed. He denied reports he attempted to overdose on pain pills.
All right, this is Troy.
I don't think I would be here if I had I taken 35 pills. And, you know, just to dispel rumors that I got my stomach pumped, you know, that's definitely untrue.
Of course. That is not true at all. David Hasselhoff cut himself shaving. This is, by the way, I forget where I read it this morning. Look, I'm not saying I was there. I'm not saying I know the definitive truth. But he apparently told the paramedics that he had tried to kill himself.
And wasn't he shoving pills in his mouth as they were taking him away?
Yeah, hold on, I can get a few more.
Did you read that?
As all spoiled rich people eventually do.
As the paramedics came, he was still shoving pills in his mouth.
Hold on, give me a second. I left two behind. Yes, no pill left behind.
Maybe they were vitamins.
Uh-huh. All right. I think it started with a V anyway.
Russell Crowe's denying reports he plans to create a movie about the crocodile hunter. He's appalled by suggestions that he plans to profit from tragedy.
He's appalled.
There's no truth to that whatsoever. That's one of those, you know, appalling pieces of shit that come out of the press.
That's fantastic.
Know, while my friend's body is still warm, you know, I'm being accused of doing commerce over his grave, and it absolutely disgusts me.
Not warm now.
I don't see that as a bad rumor. I mean, if he was such good friends with him, I think it would be kind of nice to honor him.
Who would? Okay, Sarah Dillon, in the movie of your life, who would play you? Go.
I would love Drew Barrymore to play me.
Really? Wait, hold on. I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Riley, who will play you in the movie?
Drew Barrymore.
Fantastic. All right, there you go.
Who would play Tim?
In the movie, well, see, we can't do this now because the phone lines are already full. With Wenatchee comments. Hold on. We'll do this later. Who will play us?
Tim? Anderson Cooper would play Tim.
Oh, that's totally true. No, that's perfect.
Mm-hmm. No, that, we used to have conversations about this at KOTK.
That
when
is,
I first met him, he looks exactly like him.
That is perfect. Anderson Cooper will totally play you.
You think so?
Yes. All right, there you go.
What about you, Rick?
There's no one who can play me. I may.
Teddy Bonaducci.
No. There's no one. No, and Richard Belzer is too old. There's no one who can play me. I'm irreplaceable. Let's see. Let's just take some of these calls, shall we? These are about the. This is the first thing that comes to your. And there's no reason we're doing this, by the way. It certainly has nothing to do with anybody we know who has decided to leave Portland, which is a glittering jewel of a city, and move to Wenatchee, which is a crap hole.
Beats Cleveland.
Hello, Rick Emerson Show. What comes to mind when I say Wenatchee, Washington?
Deliverance.
Thank you. There you go. Deliverance. Next. There's, yes?
Just because of the morons that live there.
It's the laugh that sold that. Thank you. Hello. What comes to mind when we say Wenatchee, Washington?
Well, when I hear Wenatchee, I think of one of the characters in the story about the watch in Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction.
One of the characters.
Yeah, after they took it out of his butt, a guy flew it back to the States, a guy by the name of...
Wenatchee. Okay, so you think of... All right, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. You think of dysentery. All right, there you go. Hello, what do you think of when we say the word Wenatchee?
Ritalin.
Ritalin, yes. All right, thank you.
Largest
sir.
Ritalin population in the country.
Is that
really?
True?
Literally.
Is that true?
As God is my witness, I swear.
Because I don't know about Ritalin. I used to know that. I mean, because I know that the Salt Lake City has the highest Prozac consumption in the country. But
everybody's on it there.
Why is everybody?
It inspires suicide.
Wenatchee, it inspires suicide.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That'll be their tagline. You'll love our new death. What?
I go now.
Okay, thank you. There you go. All right. Hello, sir. It's 503-733-2970. What do you think of when we say Wenatchee, Washington?
Eddie Izzard would say kitty fiddlers.
Yeah, this is the thing I've avoided saying, is when I was growing up, when I was about, 13, 15, 16, seems like, the only thing that Wenatchee, Washington was ever really known for, and I'm not saying that this is the case now, I'm sure they've revamped themselves now. But the only thing that Wenatchee, Washington was really known for when I was growing up in Washington was for being the home of many, many clergy-oriented child sex rings.
Yeah,
that was the city flag there.
Oh, very pleasant.
Yeah, it was just a picture of a man in a frock standing behind a small shaved boy.
Little Joy Bells.
Yes.
As they called them.
Okay. Thank you, sir. There you go.
Somebody was telling me there was some, like, famous cult there. As well, or some big terrible thing happened
in
back in the 90s. Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, but and to be fair, the 90s were full of this child sex ring hysteria, and places like Bakersfield had this too, and the McMartin preschool case. Everybody remembers that, where it was, you know, there was this sort of weird hysteria that swept the whole country, where every city had like some weird satano sex bot cult, where they were, you know, they were doing horrible things to children, and most of these turned out to be baseless. And in all fairness, I do believe that Wenatchee ended up having... I think most of the people in the Wenatchee cases ended up being exonerated. But I can't say that for sure because I haven't lived there in a while. Oh, Greg is from Wenatchee. Hello, Greg, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Yeah, hey, Wenatchee is the apple.
Oh, okay, and we're done. Thank you.
People are very emotional about their hometown.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks for calling in. Jesus Christ. Okay, you can't ever... Here, note to self, let's not mention to people that we have a 40-second delay because then they feel compelled to use all of it. Greg, for those who didn't hear it, which would be everybody but us, Greg noted that he believed Wenatchee to be the apple capital of the world.
And he has pride in his town.
And he believes it firmly and with vigor. And I said, no, Yakima is the apple capital of the world. To which he replied... That he believed that to be untrue in the extreme, and adamante. Here's Tim Riley.
Wow.
Good God, my ears are burning.
Well, there are some people who take their chicken dinners very seriously.
Uh-huh.
Police say Pierre Delis of Maryland hit an American Airlines attendant in the chest when she told him she ran out of chicken dinners. It happened during a flight to Zurich from New York. And it took a few other passengers along with another attendant to calm him down from the chickenless rage.
Can I just tell you this? That my whole life, I think I've only ever had one in-flight meal because I'm such a cheap bastard. And so I always just fly Southwest.
As a vegetarian, you get more and people are envious.
Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, you get
Somebody
platters full of food.
Somebody
yeah,
told
I
me.
I never eat airplane meat. I'm a rabid carnivore, but no, I always get vegetarian if I'm poor.
Don't ever eat airplane meat. The Sarah Dillon story. The somebody told me that the key was to ask for either a vegan or vegetarian meal or a kosher meal because sometimes they had to prepare those specially.
Yeah.
They were not, especially in certain parts of the country, they were not necessarily prepared with that kind of food. And so they had to sort of make it from scratch. Thus, you would get fresher and larger portions.
Right. It's not cardboard wrapped in cellophane.
Well, I've only, I think, to my knowledge, I think I've only ever eaten an onboard meal once. And again, just because I'm always just like, what's the cheapest flight you could possibly give me? Especially since the advent of the internet, because I just will order all my flights online, and so I'm just like, oh, and I, you know, like when you go to Expedia or Travelocity or whatever the hell, and it lets you sort by, you know, different variables, and you can either sort by the date or time of arrival or the time of departure, or you can sort by, like, the length of the trip. I always sort by price. That's the default setting. Always go for the cheapest possible flight, which means I'm always on Southwest sitting in, you know, in between, like a fat man and a small child. The only time I ever had an in-flight meal was actually paid for by a radio station. It's when I was unemployed in 1998, and it was right before I got this job, actually. It was right before I came to Portland, and they had, I was auditioning at that station in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and they actually flew me out there, first class. All I remember about the meal is that they had potato chips, or they were like potato chips, but they weren't made out of potatoes. They were made out of, like, other vegetables. It was a bag of vegetable chips, and it was like zucchini and tomato that had been sliced really thinly and then made into salted chips. It was very weird. It was one of those things that was just different enough that it was sort of strange. It was like some sort of alternate reality potato chip. That was a gripping story. Here's Tim Riley.
Then there was another scuffle aboard another American Airlines flight this time. This flight was from Peru to Miami. It started off quietly until a 56-year-old man suddenly slapped a 26-year-old man. Passengers reported hearing yelling after the slap. Apparently, the fight began when the 56-year-old dumped water on the 26-year-old, and then someone elbowed them, and then a slap and a fight ensued.
This is where?
Aboard a flight, like 918 from Peru to Miami.
You can't do that anymore, man. You so much as use the bathroom at the wrong time. They'll land the plane and throw you in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can't do that.
They were escorted off the flight.
Rick, this email says, Wenatchee, first words that come to mind. Ah, God, no, 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 no. First thing that comes to mind, honeymoon. I had my honeymoon in Wenatchee and Leavenworth.
Leavenworth,
that must have been a package deal.
Yeah. I just found the story about Wenatchee.
Yeah.
That in 1993, 43 adults were arrested and charged with 30,000 counts of sex abuse against children.
Yeah, well.
Ugh.
They don't have any golf courses there, so. Let's see, Wenatchee. What comes to mind? Trans Am, Firebird, Camaro, dirt. Let's see. What else? We have this. Rick, why all the questions about Wenatchee? Somebody should tell me. What's going on? Who's moving there? Is it someone from the show? Sarah?
I'm not moving there.
Neither am I.
Neither am I.
Okay. Tim Riley ought to be played by Martin Short. I could see that. Maybe you make him blonde. There you go.
Tim's a more handsome man than Martin Short.
Yeah. No, I
thank you.
Especially when you wear your sunglasses.
I just cannot place who should play you, Rick.
There's nobody. I can't be played by anyone. I'd have to play myself. There's no one who can conjure up the
I could see,
Don't say it.
What?
What are you going to say?
What do you think I'm going to say?
I don't know. What are you going to say?
No, I'm thinking, it's flattering, actually. I'm not really saying that you look like him, but I think you might be a good person to play you. But, what's his name? Topher
Grace?
Yeah, Topher Grace.
Really?
From that 70s show. Yeah.
Well, okay. I'll take that. I mean, sure. Here's the thing about me. All of the people that I always hear that I look like are always like 100 years old now. So it's either Richard Belzer or, what's his name, Richard Dreyfuss. That's the other one I always get, that I look like Richard Dreyfuss, which, A, I don't believe to be true, and B, it's always Richard, come to think of it. It's Richard Belzer, Richard Dreyfuss, and then somebody, this is only one person. I had one person once years ago, and I'm clinging on to this compliment for dear life. Like 20 years ago, somebody once told me that I look like Richard Gere, which I don't believe to be true. I'm holding on to that with both hands, though, because otherwise it's Richard Dreyfuss. And who? Richard Belzer. Who wants to look like Richard Belzer?
Who said you look like Richard Gere? I mean, you do.
Some person. No, I swear to God, I had someone say that to me when I was like 22, 23, which is doubly stupid because at 22, I mean, There's ever a time at which I looked less like Richard Dreyfuss than Richard Gere than now. It's when I was 22. But the other alternative is looking like Richard Dreyfuss, which I do not believe to be a compliment, by the way. A, I don't think it's true. And B, who the hell wants to look like that? Richard Dreyfuss is, in my opinion, a weird-looking guy. So I do not especially relish the idea that I might bear more than a passing resemblance to him. Just keep the Blossom comments inside, because I know you're thinking it. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, it's time to do more to combat childhood obesity. Therefore, Orange County Unified School District, which this month started allowing non-nutritious classroom snacks only three times a year, said a birthday cake doesn't have to be associated with food. The LA Times reports there are critics of this. The Texas legislature last year passed the so-called Safe Cupcake Act, which guarantees a parent's right to deliver unhelpful treats to the classroom, such as sweetheart-shaped candy on Valentine's Day and candy corn on Halloween. Representative Jim Duncan of Waco, Texas, saying there are a lot of reasons children are getting fat, and cupcakes are not one of them. He sponsored legislation after a parent was tossed out of a children's school for bringing birthday pizza to class.
Have you heard that? And I think back about all the crap that they fed us in school, though, man, and it was like there was no holiday that it wasn't an appropriate occasion for bringing 10 pounds of candy into the classroom and just putting it in a gigantic bowl somewhere.
Why can't these children learn?
Why isn't our children learning? We've also got a fresh food machine, by the way. Have you all seen that?
No, I want to go check it out, though, because I'm kind of hungry.
They just installed a new food machine here at CBS Radio Portland.
They have, like, bagels and stuff.
Yeah, but they never told us about it. It's a thing that it's over by the K-Hits.
We've got to go through the sales.
I've never been to that part of the building.
Now, why would you? There's the cubicle farm over there where they keep the salespeople for K-Hits. And there's a machine over there that it's like one of those old school, and it's like from 1975. It's one of those machines where you put the money in, and then it's got the little slidey plastic
clear
window.
They have one of those, a coin.
Yeah.
They have one downstairs.
Well, there's good stuff in it, but the problem is I went there. Boy, you want to talk about a stupid thing that will just create a disproportionate amount of rage. Let's talk about that thing when you're standing in front of the goddamn vending machine and it won't take any of your dollar bills. And you're sitting there going through every dollar bill in your pocket one by one. And then it would have you... You talk about a universal... I can feel the urge to kill rising. You talk about a universal gesture that everybody on Earth will recognize. I've already talked about when you see a guy standing downtown on the street corner late in... Hold on. I've got to calm down. I'm doing that thing. I'm ramping up. I've already talked about how you will see that guy sometimes standing on a corner downtown 5:15 p.m. on a Friday, and he's holding a box. And that is the universal symbol for I have been fired, right? There are all kinds of universal symbols and gestures and hand movements and whatever that there are no names for. Think about this one. And I do have a point here. Think about this. You want to talk about a thing that we all know and that there is no name for and no real description for. And it is this. It is the hand movement. In fact, I'm going to describe it, and you'll all know. I'm not even going to do it. I'll describe it, and you'll know what I'm talking about. It is the hand gesture, which is used to convey this. Come on, hurry up. Like if somebody's telling a story. No, if somebody's telling a story, you're going to move it. That, exactly. Sarah and Tim both just did the gesture. And it's the, come on, get to the point. When somebody's telling you a story or it's a long, drawn-out, whatever. There's no name for that. Think about how weird that is. There's no name for that gesture.
Like, hurry it up.
But, I mean, it's so, how weird that we all do the gesture the same way, and yet there's no way to just, like, you can't just go, like, giving somebody the finger. Everybody knows what that is. What the hell do you call that gesture? Doesn't make any sense. The whole thing is bizarre. Here's another universally known thing.
We actually, I'm doing this for you now.
We have Ed McCarthy
at 2. We've got to get off.
I'm just saying, the other night, and then we'll break. We'll do Ed McCarthy. We'll come back with more from Tim Riley. I got to say this. I'm standing here the other night. It was like 8 o'clock because it was the night that we were going to Clyde's. It was Monday. We were going to Dante's for Clyde over the Ground Zero Lounge. And so I told my wife, I'm like, just pick him up around 8:30 or so. You know, I'll just eat something out of the machine here. And so because I got the new fresh food machine, I can't wait to use it. So I'm back there going through all of my dollar bills one at a time. And, of course, it's always when you're really hungry. And you put it in, and it gets halfway in, and then it even makes two different sounds. Have you noticed that? It makes the really happy, like, taking your money sound, and then it makes the sound of rejection, which is sort of a... And you're like, I go through and you're folding down the corners really carefully. But I went through like $16 bills in my wallet. Wouldn't take a single one of them. And so then finally, I'm reduced to doing this. What we've all done a million times. Taking the dollar bill and rubbing it back and forth around the metal corner of the machine, trying to smooth it out, which never works, ever.
Sorry, I didn't realize the microphone.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was just
now
wasting everybody's time.
Now you're talking about food, and I need to go. I must go see this fresh food machine. You must take me.
I'll just be quiet from now on, since I'm apparently so uninteresting. Maybe I'll just move to Wenatchee. No, I won't. Because there's no reason to live there, ever, for anybody. Back after this, it's the Rick Emerson Show. Here's Pulp.